Hello and welcome to The Garden Show. My name's Kitty LaBounty.
And I'm Molly Cadler. We are here live in studio 747-5878 this morning if you would like to speak with us about what's happening in your garden.
Well, we were thinking we want to talk about roses, but just before we go on to roses, I want to give a little shout out to a couple of plants that are going to town in my garden. One is a clematis or clematis montana that is amazing right now. It's completely covering my woodshed over the top in a socially acceptable manner, or I can get in and out of the woodshed, and it's absolutely covered with light pink flowers. And it is a no fuss, basically no fuss plant that has been growing in my garden for probably 20 years and just looks absolutely outstanding. It was a big $9 investment and it has paid off just amazingly.
Both of us are enjoying serious pink in our gardens. So my spicy lights or rosy lights, azalea is completely covered in pink. It is so pink you cannot see the rest of the shrub. You can't tell it has any leaves. I mean, there's just a froth of pink in the middle of my bed. And it's been growing there for a couple 20 years, and somebody asked me about it, so I looked it up to see if it's still available in commerce. Sounds like it's difficult to find, and I read something that said they were not easy to propagate, and so it's not something that's all that easy to find. Once you've got it established, it does really well. Mine's like you, been there over 20 years and does really well. We have a great climate for it. But if you're interested in some of those really brightly colored azaleas that do well here, you're looking for a series of plants that were developed at the University of Minnesota. So they're tough-as-nails type plants bred to be in cold winters, and they're either called the Northern Lights, the High Lights, or the Spicy Lights. And some of those are the same thing, and some are a little bit different.
Yeah, it was a whole series of azalea hybrids called the Lights Azaleas. So there's Northern Lights was the first one, and that was the pink one. And then there were Orchids, Rosy, Tri, White, you know, Spicy, whatever. But it was look for things called the Lights series. And whatever is in that was bred probably at this program at University of Minnesota. And so is highly suitable for our climate. And I just couldn't be happier with mine. And like Molly's, mine is also covered with crazy pink. So I have a kind of subtler clematis sort of light pink, and I have and a pretty, like, I don't know, see from outer space pink that I just love. It's just so cheerful and bright. It's just, and again, no fuss. I fertilize it like I fertilize my other rhododendrons, and, you know, once, maybe twice a year if I'm doing well, and that's it. That's all I have to do to it. I love those kind of plants. I am a little bit of a lazy gardener.
Well, it is the gaudy time of year, as I describe it in my garden, because I have a very deep red maroon rhododendron blooming, and my other ones are starting to come on, and in the backyard, Cynthia's blooming, and she's a screaming pink rhododendron with huge trusses of flowers, really old-fashioned variety. Again, another one. This is the problem, is we grow these and find out they're hardy and beautiful and they do well, but then they're not in commerce anymore. But anyway, we're loving on Cynthia these days.
Yes, and I continue to love Vulcan, but I can talk about Vulcan next week, because next week it will be like right on target.
And it's not pink.
It's not pink. It's red. Speaking of red and pink, it's roses.
Yeah, we wanted to talk about roses, just take a single topic and work on that a little bit. Sometimes people think you can't grow roses in Alaska, and others are like, wait a minute, of course we grow roses in Alaska. We have the Sitka rose, which is the classic, easy to grow rose in our state.
Yes, and of course, and I get this question all the time, is Sitka rose must be a native rose, and it is not. The rugosa roses are native to Asia, actually, to Japan, Korea, and I believe parts of China. And then it became kind of famous here because it was used in a breeding program here when we had the
agricultural experiment station
right here in Sitka,
for the state of Alaska. Even it was territorial days, actually,
right?
And it was here,
and so apparently when it closed, they distributed these roses They're rugosa roses, and so that's how they became known as Sitka roses, at least according to one story. I'm sure there are other stories about this.
There are multiple stories, and another one is that the rugosa roses from Japan or Asia, Japan is what I had heard, were crossed with the Nootka rose, which is more of a native rose to the south. To the southeast coast and the northwest coast of BC, you know, northern United States. That's that Nootka rose. And sometimes, if you look up a Nootka rose and look at it, you can see sometimes some of these selections that look a little more like a Nootka rose. It seems like they have a redder stem. They're not as bushy a leaf, and the flowers are smaller. That's all in shade, so it's you know, you can't say for sure. They've all intermixed pretty well.
Right. So that's probably the rugosas, the Sitka roses are probably our easiest care rose. I think if you're only going to have one rose in your garden and you want to have a rose that's relatively low care, that would be the rose to get. And those are available in town. They're available in commerce. They're available from your friends, probably. The one thing to really think about carefully with a rugosa rose is that rugosa roses are very successful plants in that they try to capture new territory at all times. And so they are spreading out everywhere. So you want to, I have been kind of battling. I had this nice little hedge of roses alongside the edge of my vegetable bed, and I have been removing them with help of friends, and I'm going to move. It's not that I don't love them. I do love them, but I'm really getting tired of constantly digging up the runners all through my vegetable bed. So they are going down the slope, down to a place where they can happily take over that lower slope, and I will be able to enjoy them from there.
So if you don't have a lower slope to banish your rugosas to, a couple of strategies. Put them along the roadway or the driveway where just a natural traffic will not allow them to push their runners out. The other way is to border them on the lawn. And then if you cut your grass with the lawnmower, it will just take those sprouts off as well. You're not really preventing the runners. You're just keeping him, knocking him back all the time as you cut your grass. So those are a couple of ways to enjoy them in your yard. They don't need a lot of soil, actually. They don't need much care. They need some sun to bloom and then to be on the lookout for the aphids, because that's really their main pest here is aphids. And it generally doesn't hurt the plant any. It just doesn't look very attractive, and it can make the blossoms not very nice because it'll attack when they're in the bud, and then you have sort of malformed blossoms. So easy to either spray those off, just a mechanical spray off with plain water, or use a sudsy, soapy version to knock them back. And you don't have to worry about getting every last one. You won't anyway. But if you can get the majority of them off, generally your roses will bloom and be beautiful. And then there's one more thing about them is that they generally produce rose hips.
Right. So actually, before we go on to rose hips, what I wanted to say about roses was that you do want to prune these down every year to some level, whatever level you want them to be. You can see some examples here in Sitka. The Pioneer Home hedge is usually pruned fairly severely, but that works for them. It keeps the rose hedge at the size they like it. So you do want to prune it. If I don't prune mine become absolute, like, you know, Sleeping Beauty's hedge sort of thing. They will surround the castle. So you want to prune them. But yes, like Molly said, after they flower, they will produce really nice rose hips that you can either enjoy just as a visual display as part of your garden, or you can harvest them and do cool things with them.
They and the pruning of the rugosa is really can be a shearing. I mean, you can just cut them off. You don't have to know anything about pruning. If you read about some of the other rose varieties, there's lots of careful discussion about where to prune and how many leaflets to leave and all of this. And the beauty of the tough rugose is you just can cut them down to the best of your ability, and that's all you need to worry about.
Yes. So you can prune them. You want to make sure they do need to be fed. Roses like food, regardless of the type of rose. They like to be fed. They like to have a reasonable, you know, amount of nutrients in the soil, and more than just compost. They want some nitrogen and some phosphorus and all that. And then just love them. I mean, the only other thing I want to say about roses is make sure you grow one that has a scent. There's nothing sadder than going to sniff someone's beautiful rose in their garden that's blooming and to get nothing. Oh my gosh, that's just heartbreaking to me.
So a lot of people come here and they have grown beautiful roses in other places and they still want to go for growing that classic hybrid tea or some of the other climbing and scrambling roses. You absolutely can grow those roses here. There's a couple of things to keep in mind. If you don't want to do a lot of fussing, probably you're going to use your tea roses as annuals or mostly annuals, meaning you're going to buy them new in the spring, you're going to enjoy them for one season, and they will not survive the winter if you leave them out with no further care, and you'll start over again the next year. So as long as you're up for that, that's no problem. And there are generally quite a few of them around in commerce. Same with some called the Floribunda and the Polyanthas. These are roses. They look pretty similar, slightly smaller flowered usually, and clusters of flowers together rather than that one at a time like that classic tea rose. Some varieties are better than others. And Kitty, you want to talk about a couple of those? A
couple of the Floribunda varieties?
Well, just any of the other varieties. Like a lot of people grow the Bonica, which is, I can't remember if it's a Floribunda or a Polyantha. But anyway, it's one that is known for growing in Southeast Alaska and surviving the winter. It's generally multi-flowers on it. And I guess the way to look at roses of this type is you're going to have the best luck if they have fewer petals rather than more petals. So you think about that single rugosa rose, and if you're looking at other types of roses to try, go for the ones with fewer petals rather than many petals.
Yeah, I've spent most of my time with roses in Southeast has been trying to cultivate different ones of the old roses, kind of more of the classic roses. Things like the Albes have done really well. I've tried a bunch of the different moss roses, and that the moss roses for me are kind of a classic example of why fewer petals are better. A lot of times the really hugely multi-petaled moss roses, they just won't open. They form these beautiful buds. They just get covered with buds, and then it gets really wet. And then they don't open. You get kind of this mushy ball of petals, which is, again, it's kind of heartbreaking. So most of the older roses I grow that are singles do really well. So I like the Albas, like I said, and the Albas have been in commerce of some sort or another since Roman times and are kind of the famous white rose of York. So they've been in commerce in the UK since, I don't know, the 1400s or more. So they and actually do super well in our climate, which is pretty impressive. They're a little harder to get, but once you get one, they will reward you. But back to kind of more the newer hybrids, the ones that seem to be most often in commerce now that seem to do well in our climate are the David Austin English roses. And his philosophy as a breeder has been to take these old roses and kind of do some hybridizing with some of the newer forms and pick those best selections that are tough and easy to grow and easy to maintain in your garden. And those are the ones I see most often available in town these days.
It's been about 20 years that the David Austin roses really came into the market. And I would love to hear if you have grown David Austin roses. I have never. I've been leery of them. I would adore having them. They're gorgeous. They're super many, many petaled roses. Mm-hmm. But I had a moss rose for a little while, and it wasn't worth it to me because it always melted the buds away rather than opening. But so I'm somewhat leery of the multi-petaled roses, but I'd love to hear somebody who has been successful growing them because their hardiness and toughness, they should grow here.
I think if you have a little bit of shelter over them, not a lot, but a little bit of shelter from the biggest rain. So if you have a little bit of an overhang on your house, that will really protect some of these more multi-petaled roses that people tend to think of. And I have to admit that there are times I've gone home to Oregon where I'm from in rose season, and I've been completely discouraged from growing roses here after I see, oh, that's actually what they're supposed to look like. And then I go back to my rugosas and I'm super happy. But when I try to grow the roses that I grew up with and I'm familiar, the ones that scramble over barns and woodsheds and things like that, I'm like, eh, maybe not. You know, it's just a little wet here for some of these roses to really hit their absolute peak.
But if you want to, go for it. One good way, as Kitty mentioned, is under an eave. The other is in a container. And if you have a greenhouse or a porch or something like that, that's a way to winter over those roses, would be to grow them in a pot, move them out during the best part of the season, and then kind of barely water and hold them over the winter. And that should be successful as well. It's a little more fussing.
So one of the roses I like that Molly hasn't had, I don't think you had luck with this one, but I love it. It's the Sweetbriar rose, the Eglantine. It's another old rose. It's a natural hybrid between probably a damask rose, I believe. I might be crossing that. Anyway, what's nice about that is the foliage is fragrant. It smells like apples, and it's absolutely wonderful. Well, I guess we're out of time today for the garden show.
We have a couple more minutes, but my eglantine wouldn't bloom, and so I was like, I'm sorry, but
yeah,
your sweet foliage is nice, but you've also got a lot of thorns, so I'm not willing to go there.
Yeah, no, mine seems to bloom pretty well. It does like a lot of sun, and just kind of the right amount of fertilizer, but luck of the draw.
We'd love to hear from you about your luck with roses, and thanks so much for joining us this morning. We'll be back next week with more from The Garden Show. I'm Molly Kabler.
And I'm Kitty LaBounty.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The St. Regis Mohawk Tribe is reaching out to doctors in Cuba for help in treating diabetes. North Country Public Radio's David Summerstein has more.
People with diabetes can get foot ulcers, and they can get so bad that toes or the whole foot have to be amputated. And that can devastate diabetics and their families.